Good morning, guys. I'm wondering if any of you have ever felt like you're different than everybody else around you. I think most of us have felt that before. I know that when we first moved here to New York City, I felt like there was a spotlight following me around everywhere I went, and I felt like everybody was kind of like looking at me and knew like I didn't know what I was doing. And it's weird because, you know, I've been to New York City a lot. Visited since I was in high school, and then we'd actually spent weeks coming and visiting our friends, the Travises. So I'd spent a lot of time in Inwood, but now this wasn't just visiting. This was actually my home. And I felt like everybody else was a true New Yorker, and I obviously wasn't. And I imagine that some of you felt that way before you moved to New York, and maybe you moved here to America and you felt that way. I also feel, you know, I've gotten over that. I feel like a New Yorker as much as a person who's lived here for 4 years can feel like a New Yorker. But I also feel like the only person who's a little bit different in my staff meeting sometimes. You know, I love being on staff here at Everyday Church, and I work with four great other pastors who happen to be men, and they are fun and supportive and encouraging, but there are times where I am obviously the girl working with the boy. There was one time where it was very obvious. We were in a car together, all five of us, and we were driving across the bridge, and one of the guys, I think it was Chris, said, okay guys, if there was a sniper, where would the best position be to kill a sniper? And I was like, but girls don't think about it. Don't think about it. But the guys, they were like in it. They were like debating right away, and you know, and looking around like the best position. And I was like, yeah, I'm a girl. And I shouldn't complain because my husband, he experiences that the opposite way every single day. We have three daughters, so he's the lone man living with girls. And as they get older, you know, two of them are teenagers. It gets more and more painful for him. You know, there are days where he's like, can't take any more hairpins, and the hair products, and the shoes that are everywhere, and the talking, you know, and the drama that comes with living with girls, you know, the poor guy. But there are more painful moments for us when we feel different and alone, and I can remember really clearly what it was like to be, I know, shocking that I remember what it was like to be a teenager. And there was a painful time for me, because I remember feeling like everybody else, their family had more money than me. I remember feeling like all the other kids had more freedom than I got from my parents. I felt like our family didn't look like any other families at the school that I went to. And I remember feeling like everybody had more confidence than I felt in myself. And I just wanted to feel like everybody else, be like them all. And then at the same time, I did want to be like them. I wanted to be my own person. And there was this struggle here. And I know that a lot of you can maybe relate to that. Certainly students here, if you just started maybe high school or middle school, you know what that feeling feels like. Or perhaps you are the only believer in your office and you feel that way. Or in your whole extended family, you're the only one who's really explored your faith in a real meaningful way. And you're always feeling a little bit like the odd person out. Well, the main characters of our story today, they certainly knew what it felt like to be different than the crowd around them. They were Jews living in a place with Babylonians all around them, and the Babylonians were different in every way. They had a different language, different culture, different gods. And so we have to ask ourselves, how did they survive living in a place that wasn't their home? It's important that we answer that question because last week, if you were here or you listened to the message online, you heard that Chris talked about how we all are also living in exile, because this world actually isn't our home. God created this world, a beautiful world for us, but it's a place where sin and pain and death has entered in, and so this is no longer our home. Instead, our home is in heaven with God. It's a place where truth and beauty and love reign forever, and yet we are here in exile. And so we have to ask ourselves, how did these men, how did these four main characters in our story, how did they not only survive not being in a place that was their home, but how did they thrive? We are in the season 4, episode 18 of the story. And right now in the story, we found out that the nation of Israel is gone. The nation of Judah is gone. They once were a powerful nation. The Israelites were a powerful nation. They had a great kingdom. They had money and wealth, and their kings had these beautiful palaces. They had this great temple where they could worship their God, and all of that has been taken away from them. It had to be so painful for them. And they watched as other Jews were killed, and this small group of Jews, they are taken away, and they live in Babylon, where everybody is different from them. And we see these four men who, the king of Babylon, he chooses the best and the brightest. It says that he picks the most good-looking and the most talented men, and he pulls them out, and he wants to teach them in the ways of Babylon, and he wants to teach them the language and their culture, and he's trying to raise them up to be leaders. And so we meet these four men. Their Hebrew names are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But quickly, they're given Babylonian names. And so we now know them as Belteshazzar and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I find it interesting that we find the story in the book of Daniel in the Bible, and Daniel was the author of that book, and he refers to himself in the book as Daniel, which I think you would. If you're writing a story about yourself, you're going to pick the name you were given. And so he does that. But his friends, he uses their Babylonian names. So it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's how I learned their names, and that's what we're going to use today. But you see how even every part of their culture is being stripped away from them. It's a power play. You think about European colonization, and that's what happened. You went to different nations, you took away their language, and even their names. You took away their names. And so that's what's happened to these men. Now, I think people who are living in exile, they kind of have three choices of how to survive in life. And the first one that they make is they can pretend they're still living at home. And what I mean by that is they just do everything the same as they were doing in the other place. So for the Jews, they would have just pretended like life hasn't changed. They're still in Israel. I'm going to keep the same customs and culture. Everything in my day is going to be exactly the same. I'm going to pretend like the Babylonians, they don't exist. I'm not going to talk to them as much as I can. We're just going to keep with our Jews. And certainly there were Jews who did that, but not these men. In fact, they go and they live with the Babylonians. It says for 3 years they live with them, and they learn from them. And so they are building relationships, actually, with their captors. The second option is that people tend to make a new home for themselves. While they're in exile, they just choose to give up all their old ways and make this new home, just accept all the practices and culture of this new place. And certainly there were Jews who did that. They just tried to become Babylonians. But these four men don't do that either. They certainly learn the language and the culture, and they make friends, and yet they still retain their identity as Jews, as true followers of God. And they are constantly having to make choices, really hard choices. And the first one, it just seems, you know, like a small thing, but it actually was a very big thing for Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They are just given food by the king. Now, this was a gracious thing for the king to do. He liked them, and so he gave them his food from the palace, the best food in the whole empire they were given. But if you know Jewish law, you know that that food actually was unclean for them to eat, and to eat that would actually be a sin against God. And so they have this terrible dilemma. What do I do? Refuse the king's food? And that's what they do. They ask the chief officer if they can just have some vegetables and water. Like, can you imagine going to somebody's house and just saying, can I just have some vegetables and water? You know, it doesn't win you friends when you do that. And so the chief officer, he liked Daniel, and he wants to help him, but he was worried, like, I could get in trouble if you start looking bad. If I'm supposed to give you this great food, and then you're going to look bad, I'm going to look bad to the king, and I'm going to get in trouble. So Daniel says, okay, we'll give it 10 days. 10 days, I'm just going to eat vegetables and drink water. And let's see what happens. Because he knew that God had the ability to sustain him. And that's exactly what happened. After 10 days, the chief officer comes back and he looks at them and says, hey, you guys look actually better than everybody else your age. And so that's how they survive with that first thing. And they keep learning and growing in power and respect of the Babylonians. In fact, Daniel, he has the ability to interpret dreams. And so he has the time that he interprets a dream for the king. And of course, he's able to do that. And he gets into an even greater position. And it says by the end, he's living in the king's palace. So just great power for these men. But another problem comes, and that is the king of Babylon, his name is King Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to say that a lot, and I might mess it up. So his name is King Nebuchadnezzar, and he is, thank you. So King Nebuchadnezzar, I have to say all these words, these names that are very long, and the water will help me. Thank you. So King Nebuchadnezzar, he built this huge statue, this golden statue, and his idea is he's going to build a statue and the crowds are going to come and there's going to be a time when they all have music together, and when the music is playing, everybody knows that they have to bow down and worship the statue. And in fact, in case they just didn't want to do that, he gives them the threat that he's going to throw them in the fiery furnace if you don't do that. So, you know, that's some encouragement there. And so the crowd gathers, and he plays the music. Everybody bows down. Not too surprising with that threat, but they all bow down, except in the crowd is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so they choose not to bow down to the idol, knowing that that would be against God's law, that they only can bow down to their one true God. And King Nebuchadnezzar sees them, and he knows that they're disobeying his orders. And so he gives them one last chance. You know, they're great leaders. He doesn't want to lose them. So he gives them another chance. He plays the music. The music is played, and they are unmoved, standing tall, and he's furious. He's furious with them, and he says he's so angry that he orders the fire to be lit seven times hotter. I don't really know how you decide how to make fire multiply. You know, like, how does that work? I don't know. But then they bound them up, and they throw them in the fire. And it says that it was so hot that even the servants who threw them into the fire, that they are killed just by the heat that radiates. And so, as they're thrown into the fire, King Nebuchadnezzar keeps watching. And you can imagine, he wants to see them suffer. And instead, he sees something crazy happen. The three men are walking around, not screaming, and instead, it seems like they're joined by somebody else. And it says that he says, look, I see four men walking around in the fire. They are not tied up, and they are not burned. The fourth man looks like a son of the gods. So obviously, he sees somebody else is in there, and he knows he only threw three people in there, so something has happened, and he calls them to come out of the fire. So they come out of the fire, and it says that they are unharmed, and they even don't smell like smoke, which, when I read this, I was like, that's crazy. They don't smell like smoke because, you know, we went camping a month ago, and our stuff still smells like fire. And then I was like, well, so is the fact that they didn't get burned up. You know, that's kind of crazy, too. And crazy stuff. So the king, he sees that a miracle has happened, that God has intervened. And he says, praise the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their God has sent his angel and saved his servants from the fire. And these three men trusted their God and refused to obey my command. They were willing to die rather than serve or worship any other god than their own. So it's pretty obvious that these men did not make Babylon their home. It was a little bit too late, this repentant spirit in King Nebuchadnezzar. It's a little too late for him. Daniel had warned him that his kingdom and his power was going to end, and he actually, like, loses his mind and is crazy and loses his power. There's another king that comes in control, and he likes Daniel. Daniel stays in his position. And then a whole other empire comes to power. It's takes over the Babylonians. It's now the Empire of Persia. And there's a new king. His name is easier to say. King Darius. He likes Daniel as well. He puts him into power. There are three main guys in power, and Daniel is one of them. We don't know a lot about the other two guys, but we do know they didn't like Daniel, which isn't surprising. You know, he was the one lone Jew. He's an oddball. He's weird. He doesn't fit in. And so they're trying to find a way to get rid of him. And so they're watching for any dirt they can get on him. The problem is, Daniel is good at what he does. He's been in his position because he's a bright guy. And also, he's got great character. So they can't find anything wrong with this guy. The only thing they can decide to do is he worships God. And so they're one true God. He won't worship the Babylonian God and the Persian gods. And so they devise a plan. And they go to King Darius and they say, how about we have a new law? For 30 days, people are only allowed to pray to you. You know, I'm sure they buttered him up and he was like, sounds like a great idea. And just in case people don't want to do that, well, we can throw them into a den of lions. You know, very creative with their threats here. And so everybody hears about this. You know they can't pray to anybody but King Darius for 30 days. And so Daniel hears this. He's got some options, right? He can choose to take 30 days off. And, you know, that's an option for him. I'll just stop praying to God for 30 days. Or, you know, he could pray in his head and not let anybody know that he's praying. You know what I'm talking about, where you're just kind of like praying in your head and nobody has to know about it? I mean, when I was a kid, my family, we would go out to dinner. We didn't do it a lot, but we always prayed together before meals at our house and when we went out. And I remember as a kid, that embarrassed me because nobody else was doing it, and I thought everybody was staring at us. And so I tried to, like, do this thing where my parents would close their eyes and bow their head, and I would act like I was going to do that. And then I would, like, open my eyes and, like, act like I'm not like them. But in my head, I'm still going to pray because, you know, that's important. And I love God and everything. I just don't want to look weird here. So, you know, Kendall has that option. But he doesn't take it. He keeps his routine. Every day he prays three times a day. He goes to the same spot, which happens to be right in front of a window that's facing Jerusalem. So everybody sees him pray for three times. And, you know, it's not surprising. The other guys are there waiting. They see him, and they go report it to King Darius. And so King Darius, he didn't think about this before. He didn't think about the fact that Daniel, that put him in an awkward position. He likes Daniel. But now he knows he made a law, and even the king can't go against the law. He can't change it. Once he's made a law, it has to be followed. And so he's sad, but he has to take Daniel, and he goes with him as he's thrown into the lion's den. And they cover it up with a stone, and it says that the king says, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. I think it's crazy that the guy who wanted people to pray to him, is now hoping that this God is real. And so he's up all night, he can't sleep, he's worried about Daniel. He rushes there at dawn, and he calls out to Daniel. And Daniel answers to him, and he says, my God sent his angels, and he shut the mouth of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. You see, there are three options that people have when they're living in exile. You can pretend like you are living at home, you can make a new home, or you can be used by God while you wait to go home. I want to repeat that because it's really important we get this. You can pretend you are living at home, you can make a new home, or you can be used by God while you wait to go home. And these four men chose to be used by God. Instead of, you know, hiding from the Babylonians or becoming a Babylonian, instead they decided to take the unique opportunity they were given by God and make an impact on their captors. And as a result, King Darius, he watches this and he makes another decree. He says, I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom of people, they must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. It's crazy. This guy wanted everybody to pray for him just 2 days ago. And now he's saying that there's a God out there who his dominion never ends. The God of the Israelites who've been, you know, they've been defeated over and over and over again, and yet his power never ends. It lasts forever. That's quite an impact that Daniel was able to make. And you get to make a choice too, because this is not your home. We are all living in exile, and there's a time when we'll leave this world and we can be at home. We'll never have to feel different or alone or ache for something more. But until that day, we all have to make a choice. Are we going to pretend like our work here is done? It's very tempting to do that, to hang out with people who are like us, who enjoy the same things we do, who believe the same things we do. We can read our Bible together and sing our songs and just forget that everybody out there is hurting. Or we can just choose to live like everybody else here in the world. You know, if this is our world, then it's all about our comfort and our happiness, right? And I know that is the easiest choice to make. It comes very naturally to all of us to just be about ourselves. Or we can choose to make an impact in this world while we wait to go home. I know that that is the hardest choice to make, but I believe it's the most fulfilling. So if we're going to make the hard choice and make an impact on this world, what is the key going to be to our success? I think we see it in Daniel's life. I think Daniel knew that he would not be able to make a difference in the Babylonian world if he was a Jew and served God if he wasn't in constant prayer. I think it's the reason why he couldn't give it up, not even for a day, not for 30 days. It was the only way he could be successful. And I think we're fooling ourselves if we think we can do it, if we can make an impact in this world and not be in constant prayer. Prayer was so important to Daniel that he had a plan. He had a plan for how he was going to pray. He did it 3 times a day, same place. He knew exactly what was going to happen. And I want to say to you that you need a plan too. I'm going to admit, plans aren't the easiest thing for me. I mean, I'm good at planning, you know, an event for my job or, you know, the curriculum downstairs for the kids. But when it comes to personal stuff, like, you know, grocery plan or budget plan or a prayer plan, I've struggled. I've struggled for years. And just in the last maybe year and a half, I've really tried to incorporate something new into my life. I was introduced to it a year and a half ago. It's called the Daily Office. And that's just a term that is given to spending this time with God that early Christians used to do. They would stop 3 times during the day. They called it their office or their work time, where their prayer was actually the work of their day. And so they would stop and pray. And this is what it looks like for me. So I start with 2 minutes of silence. Now, if you ever try 2 minutes of silence, that means like stop thinking for 2 minutes too. Like that is the hardest thing. But I've gotten into the practice of starting with 2 minutes of silence. Then there's some scripture that I'll pray through, and I'll ask for God to show me something through the scripture. Then there's usually a question that I ask myself, and then there's followed by a scripture verse or a prayer that is already written, and sometimes that prayer is newly written by somebody, you know, today, or it could be like an ancient prayer that Christians have been praying for generations, and then follow that by 2 minutes of silence. So it takes me about 20 minutes, and I really noticed a difference. I keep it on my phone. It's on Kindle on my phone, so it's right by my bed, and I try to do it right even before I get out of bed. But sometimes that doesn't happen, and I know that before I go to bed, I have to do it. And I've kept the routine, and I've really noticed a difference in my life. Early in the summer, I kind of got out of the routine, though. You know how that happens? And I noticed a difference in my life. I noticed that I had less patience for my kids. I noticed that in my inner thoughts, I started doubting myself and questioning my self-worth. And I noticed that I didn't do that as much when I was praying every day. And then those same patterns were coming back. And I knew I needed to get back on the plan and start praying again. And it really has made a difference. And so I feel like we all need a plan. You all got a card. Many of you got a card. If you didn't get a card, there are people who want to pass out card to you. So raise your hand if you didn't get a card. And they will also give you a pen. We're going to take some time. time to fill this out. Some of you have already filled out a card like this, maybe made a plan, but that's okay, do it again, because it's always good to review how's that plan working for you, how do you need to change things, maybe rejuvenate your desire to keep with the plan. So I'm gonna give you some time to fill out your card, and we'll talk a little bit more about prayer. So as you see, it just asks questions like, who will you pray for, or what are you going to pray for, where are you going to pray, when are you going to pray, and why? Like, what do you want to accomplish through your prayers? These are important questions to ask. It helps you have a plan. And I want to say that I gave you an example of what I do, but there are lots of plans out there. I mean, you can journal every day where you're just writing out your prayer to God. There are lots of different plans out there. The important thing is to have a plan. Maybe you're just meeting with somebody regularly and you're praying with them. It's just important you have a plan. And I imagine that there are some of you who are thinking, I've never really given prayer a try. But, you know, I pray when I'm desperate, but as far as like praying every day when I don't have a great need, I don't know how to do that. And I want to suggest to you that learning how to pray looks a lot like learning how to do lots of things, like learning how to cook, or learning how to clean, or learning how to make something. You watch somebody else do it, and you learn that way. And there's a lot of things that need to be learned in community, and I believe prayer is that way. And so we have these everyday groups where they're smaller groups where we learn from each other. Some of what we do is pray together. And you're not going to be put on the spot to pray out loud, but you are going to hear other people who are maybe a little bit farther along. So three of our everyday groups are meeting today. I just want to suggest if you are a leader or a part of a leadership team of a everyday group, could you raise your hand for a minute? All right. So these are awesome groups. If you are looking for a group, I want to suggest talk to these people and find a group and give it a try. You're going to learn a lot, including how to pray. But if you go to a group, you listen, and you're still a little bit lost, that's okay. All you need to do is ask for help. You know, Jesus' followers, they followed him everywhere. They prayed with him every day, and still they were confused. And they said, Jesus, teach us how to pray. And Jesus said what we term as the Lord's Prayer, and walked them through. And so don't feel embarrassed if, you know, Jesus' followers, if they needed extra help, it's reasonable that you might need some help. So please ask for help to get you started to pray. You know, anybody on staff, we'd love to help you. There are lots of people here that would help you to get to start to pray. Because I wonder if we really can not just survive, but thrive living in exile here. Will we be able to remember that our identity comes from God and not from the people around us if we're not praying every single day? I know I can't. Will we be able to walk down the streets of New York and see all the pain, all the dysfunction, all the anger and resentment that's happening in our city and not get completely overwhelmed unless we're praying? We can't pretend like it isn't there. We can't ignore it. If we're going to make an impact in our community, we're going to need to pray. But imagine if we are like Daniel and we make an impact in the people in our lives, our friends and our family. What if spending time with us and how we choose to live makes people acknowledge who God is, like King Darius did? Imagine what the impact this church can make if all of us chose to make an impact on this world and get our strength from prayer. I know it's what God wants us to do. He wants us to make an impact. He really cares that that we love each other and that we take care of one another inside the church, but he wants more than that. Imagine if all of us just moved away from Inwood and from Washington Heights and Riverdale. Wherever you're from, just imagine that we all just moved away and everyday church didn't exist anymore. Would the neighborhood notice a difference? Would it change? I want the answer to be yes, and I know you do too, but it's going to mean we all have to make a choice, and we're going to have to get our strength from prayer. But the good news is that it is only for a little while, because eventually we will get to go home. And I know you long for a home of peace and rest and complete fulfillment, where you never have to question if you're good enough or if you're loved, where there's only safety and joy. And it's so hard to imagine, and yet in the deepest part of our being, I think we all long to be there. So I pray today that you are encouraged, that you make the choice to make an impact on this world, and you're also encouraged by the words of God to his people who were living in exile, and he said to them, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me. When you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you and bring you back